ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to QSO. It's All About Ham Radio. Our co-host is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, along with my son David, KG4WXW, and our special guest is Kevin DePlantis, W4KEV. Now, this show is already in progress, so we'll join it now on QSO.
Because of Hurricane Katrina, you lost your home down by, and so did I, down by where we lived in St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana. And so you landed, you floated up north to Knoxville, and you've been in Knoxville pretty much since the storm. And you are continuing your broadcast career, or as I like to refer to it, the scam of the century up there in Knoxville, right?
Yeah, and I still haven't found the home, so if anyone has seen it, I would like to get it back.
Yeah, it's floated away. So Kevin is, and probably your claim to amateur radio fame is, you are, I would say, arguably, if not the largest, one of the largest repeater owners in Tennessee by number, anyway, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Tennessee. Might even be the Southeast. As we were talking earlier, I did a count. And between repeaters and links, I've got 23 here. Wow. In East Tennessee.
Wow. So you are infinitely qualified to talk about repeaters and keeping the fun in amateur radio, which is something that Ted and I kind of have gotten off on the last couple of times that we visited. But it's quite funny. Last month, Ted, as you and I were talking, Kevin was texting me or private messaging me or something. Yes, furiously, just agreeing with everything we said, and like, oh my God, I can't believe you're reading my mind. And so we thought that Kevin would be the perfect person to get on to continue the discussion of keeping the fun or putting the fun back into amateur radio, and specifically in local repeaters, because arguably that's where we all start. We all start as technicians with our 2-meter or 440 radios, talking to the locals on the repeaters, and some never get past that. Some find that as their little niche, and they're happy to stay there. Others, of course, go on to HF or microwave or moon bounce or digital modes or any number of a million other different directions you can go in this great hobby. But Kevin is infinitely qualified to talk about keeping the fun in local communications on repeaters and amateur radio.
Well, so, but now you have to understand that when it comes to 2-meter repeaters, the proper use of these things absolutely is for emergency purposes only. So if you're fun. Which I don't see anything about fun in part 97, okay? And I think that in keeping with part 97, if you're going to have fun, I think you need this. You need to confine this to off the air, private areas. You know, getting
secluded,
together. Right?
Caves.
Exactly. Yeah, and not exposing the general amateur community and the general public to such a word like fun. Okay, a very strong belief, and I believe that we need to stand up for what's right.
You must be tongue, orthodox, Ham.
Tongue firmly planted in cheek.
You know, I think those rules only apply to Nashville.
I don't know. I know when we left Nashville here not too long ago on a trip up to Detroit, and then another one when we went on to a trip to, I think it was Richmond, Virginia. We simply just could not find anyone anywhere on a repeater that would reply to us. I mean, it was just really weird, you know. I did a little experiment, you know. I came on and started just making up a little poetry off the cuff, you know, and talking like that and signing my call. Immediately, a control operator appeared on the frequency to tell me to stop doing that. But they couldn't talk to us.
Was he probably an OO as well?
I really don't know. I mean, but that was. But anyways, I'm pulling your leg here because it's just a hot button with me. that you can travel across this country, and we've got more repeaters now than we ever had. We have got oodles of ways to hit them, like Beifung for $30. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things out there that we never had before, never had all these conveniences. But yet, 10 years ago, there was more activity on 2 meters, people to talk to, people to hang out with. Today, it's like, you know, it reminds me of the desert out there at Area 51. You know, it's just, there's nobody there, you know. So anyhow, Kevin, you're a big repeater operator. Tell me, what's going on? Why do you think this is?
Well, we discuss that very fact all the time. And there is no concise conclusion other than the distraction of the internet and cell phones. When I came up here, one of the small reasons that I fell in love with the place on my first visit to live here, been coming up here all my life, was, oh my goodness, there's so much activity everywhere I would turn. Repeater after repeater, constant activity. And then it started to wane off and wane off. Well, I got involved in the repeater acquisition game, I guess about 8-9 years ago, as guys started to die, and I had experience. I had the means to put up the repeaters, had the locations. It all kind of worked out, but the activity was still dying. Tried doing things like Don, if he hasn't already told you, does a lot of IDs for me. I write a lot of stuff. I get people in the building, a lot of radio personalities, to read these highly sarcastic, somewhat insulting, somewhat provocative identifiers. And it garners some interest. People always say, oh, I love that. I love this. I love that. But it didn't really get traction. So I would start to try to find guys who I call are anchors. And to me, an anchor is a person, whether male or female, who has the time, the free time, to stay near or around the repeater and be kind of the host. Whether he's interesting or not, he's a welcoming presence. And as a lot of us know, activity breeds activity. We also know that a lot of people are listening. A lot.
Yeah.
You can sit and talk about nothing, and all of a sudden, you hit one chord or one topic that strikes a chord, and all of a sudden, people are coming out the woodwork. So we know they're there. They're just not engaging. And so it took a while. Went through a number of guys who would come in and out, you know, be there 6 or 7 months and move on either to another repeater or moved out of the area. And then about a year to a year and a half ago, a gentleman came on who frequented another repeater and was a little, I guess, disgruntled, had some things go on, and he started looking for another home. And I didn't really know the guy, but come to find out, he was the shot in the arm that the repeaters that I have linked together, and I've got 4 linked together, 4 VHF. And like some light from heaven above, the clouds parted, and all of a sudden, the activity started. And the guy is what you've described. He's fun. He's got little catchy phrases, little nuances that just invite people in. He's friendly. He's usually there most of the time. He's retired, got a lot of energy, and he tries to make it fun. He does exactly what you describe and says it all the time. We need to make it fun. We need to be topical. We need to talk about ham radio as much as possible, but we also need to make it inviting so that guys who are mic shy will feel comfortable in engaging with other hams.
Well, I think that is so important. Let me ask you a question, though, and not to interrupt our conversation, but are you running any sort of audio gear coming out of your mic going into the computer? And the reason why I'm saying is you are gated very, very heavy as you're talking.
Is this better? Yeah, I did, because I never know when the Jack Russell Terriers are going to get set off by something, so I was trying to keep the ambient noise down. Is this better?
That is better. Matter of fact, if it's a gate, I just shut it off. You know, since it really sounds funny. It's like you're, you know. So anyways, yep. I just thought I'd mention that, but let's move on. Here's an interesting thing when you're talking about people listening but not being, you know, active. I'm not real active on the 2 meter repeaters here, because every time I get on, I run into a curmudgeon that has to start extolling all these rules and things. And so anyways, every once in a while I'll jump in. We're on our way back from a job working on a transmitter or on a studio somewhere, and there'll be myself and David and Holly. Holly's in the vehicle with me, and David sometimes is, and sometimes David and Matt are traveling together. And of course, Matt, David is engineer at Tribeca Nazarene University, and he takes care of all the radio and TV stuff there. He was the head of, well, I don't know, he's worked for 3 or 4 radio stations here in Nashville, so he's got quite a background. Matt's chief engineer for Dave Ramsey and that group. So we're all just a bunch of geeks on the air. So we'll check in. There'll be somebody talking, and I'll jump in. And there'll be the typical 2 meter kind of enforcer, cop, critic, non-official observer type. Okay, he's on there, and I start talking. Well, of course, you know, you got 10 minutes before you really have to do an identification. So you can get 5 minutes of good conversation in with no ID whatsoever. So what I would do is I would do the 5 minutes of conversation, and then I'd break and I'd say, let me ask a question. How hard is it to pass the test to legally talk on these radios? Now, let me tell you what. You talk about curmudgeons coming out of the woodwork, man. It's like picking up a rug with a light on or turning a light on in the room and watching the cockroaches scurry. I mean, they come out of nowhere. You know, you don't have
get the direction of
it. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's unreal, you know,
and stirring up the monkeys. That's funny.
Know, and as much as I'm on the radio, I mean, in terms of QSO and been around, you'd think they'd be hip to my ignorance, you know, but no, I mean, they're there to enforce the law. What is that? What is the old Beach Boys song, Long Tall Texan or something? You know, I'm here to enforce the law. I can't remember. It was, you know, giddy up. You probably remember what I'm talking about, Don. Well, maybe not.
I have no clue.
You're not old enough. No, you're just not old enough, anyways.
Not quite.
So it was just amazing. You know, here they come, you know, by the droves. And I've thought about that. I thought maybe that's what you have to have. Maybe what you got to do is you got to have a guy that can really talk two voices. And he signs in with his call sign, okay, and he's Rob or whatever, and then he comes back in as Bob in another voice and just acts a complete fool and gets these guys all stirred up, you know. I mean, not breaking the law or doing anything unusual, illegal, but just stuff that would really aggravate the curmudgeon ham. And I'm beginning to wonder if that isn't the best way to get those guys active and talking on the radio. Now, what do you think about that?
Well, I got to tell you, we really don't have the curmudgeon hams over here. Most of them are in the grave. What's left are the new guys. I'd say
now, Kevin,
70.
Kevin,
yeah, uh-huh.
What did you do to those old curmudgeon hams?
I wasn't a curmudgeon.
He said most of them were in the grave. I was like, don't want to go through his area and act up. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry. Just
no, but there's been a rash of estate sales here, you know, in the last couple of years. But we just don't. I don't see that. You know, just like the distinctions between the three areas of Tennessee, there is a stark difference between East Tennessee and Middle Tennessee. Big difference. Much more lighthearted here. Yeah, you got some serious guys, but by and large, they're easygoing, fun-loving. They want to have good conversation and keep it light. I just don't see that. What I what I what I see is the distraction, the well, we do have some I wouldn't say political issues, and that seems to be the driving force when you have dissent and, you know, guys leave repeaters. But by and large, everybody here pretty much gets along. You know, we don't have the problems with QRMing the repeaters. One or two guys every now and then will creep up. But for the most part, it's just people sit around and don't engage. And that's not what's instilled in these classes. When people go to classes and they, you know, they're taking their tests, we're even doing things where we're taking hams and we're not just being mentors to them, but we're trying to get them to engage. Hey, introduce these new guys to some people that have been on for a while. Get them used to talking to people, and then they might engage in, hey, I'm just going to throw out my call and see what I get. Going fishing for conversation. And that's what we're trying to instill, and hopefully it's spreading. But I got to tell you, we have a lot of activity, and it's, I think, primarily because of the guys who have the personality, who get on there, who engage others, who throw it out there to say, hey, come on in. You know, if you're out there, we want to talk to you. Don't be shy. All those kind of things. Incorporate what it takes to bring the hams out of the forest, out of the woodwork, out of the shadows, out of the caves, whatever you want to define it as.
Well, I was going to say, my
ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. We'll be right back with our special guest, Kevin Duplantis, and co-host Don Wilbanks, right after this. Now, some think that the ARRL is a bunch of old guys with square glasses and powdered wigs in Newington, Connecticut, looking down their noses at the ham radio fraternity. It's just not so. The ARRL is all the thousands of people you see at the Dayton Hamvention and Flea Market, the smiling faces at Hamcation, the happy people at Pacificon, Huntsville, HamQuest, Shelbyville, Dalton, and many, many more. All the hams that listen to the QSO radio show and the thousands of hams that listen to WTWW, that's the ARRL. All the folks that are listening and watching Ham Nation. Hams in Washington, D.C., representing you and all the hams to the FCC, protecting our rights as members of this fraternity. And right now, you can be a part of the ARRL for $49.95. That's right, you get 12 issues of QST, a major technical magazine. Very professional magazine. What? 12 issues for $49.95? But not only do you get that, you get every issue of QST ever published online. You get representation in Washington. And you know what? They offer a consulting service. Got a problem with your radio or your antenna or your installation? You can call Newington, Connecticut, and get an expert on the telephone to help you talk you through your problems. 1 year membership to the ARRL for $49.95 is the best possible deal you could ever hope to find in terms of ham radio. Go to their website, ARRL.org. That's ARRL.org, and join today. If you're looking to purchase a new piece of ham gear, think no further than R&L Electronics. That's R&L Electronics. You can find them in Google. You can locate their website. And you need to go there. These are folks you can trust. These are folks that you will enjoy purchasing a piece of equipment from. And not only are they honest, but they will give you the best possible price. Prices that you won't find at any other ham radio distributor. That's why I go there. And I love the friendly folks. Let me tell you, if you're thinking about antennas, transmission line, microphones, amplifiers, antenna tuners, HTs, whatever you've got on your mind, do not hesitate. Do not hold back. Call R&L Electronics.
Google them on the web. You can find them real easy. That's R&L Electronics. Here's a great idea from hamtestonline.com. If you've already got your ticket and you know someone you'd like to get into the fraternity of ham radio, this is the time to do it with a special program called Ham It Forward. You could pick up a membership. They're about $25 for the technician test. And I'm telling you, I know folks that couldn't put batteries in a flashlight that wound up getting their ticket through Ham Test Online. Ham It Forward. That's the name of the program. Get other folks involved in this fraternity of ham radio. You will be so glad you did. It takes all the work out of being an Elmer and gives you the confidence, as well as the person taking the test, that they know the material and it's easy, it's not boring. HamTestOnline.com for Ham It Forward. HamTestOnline.com. If you enjoy listening to shortwave at home, you'll enjoy it even more in the car. You can get away from the dull, boring AM, FM stations and listen to something really cool on shortwave in your car with Car Shortwave Radio. Their website is carshortwaveradio.com. A small, inconspicuous antenna mounts either on your trunk or on your hood, plugs into the cigarette lighter, comes in on your car radio, and you can read the frequency out on your car radio dial. You control it all with a little key fob. It's slick. It makes your car radio sound like a Wurlitzer jukebox when you're listening to WTWW. Go to carshortwaveradio.com. That's carshortwaveradio.com. Once again, go to carshortwaveradio.com, and you'll be glad that you did. The best tasting coffee in the entire world comes from a blind coffee roaster who's been blind from birth, Jerry Leary. His company is The Unseen Bean. Go to his website, theunseenbean.com. You'll be glad you did. Try his kilowatt blend or his contester's blend. Theunseenbean.com. Okay, right now, I'm sitting next to a stack of QSL cards and a stack of U.S. postage stamps. That's right. You want one of these QSL cards? Do ya? Well, then get off your butt and send us an email. The email address is simple. It's simply email at WTWW.us. That's email at WTWW.us. And we will send you a QSL card. You'll have your own WTWW official QSL card. Hey, once again, folks, thanks so much for listening to WTWW, your favorite shortwave radio station just outside Nashville, Tennessee. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the QSO Radio Show. Now we're going to get back to our guest, Kevin DePlanis, W4KEV, and our co-host Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, right now. My son David here has been on 2 meters in the area for a long time. 2 meters and 440. And I was just going to ask him, I mean, we've traveled a little bit across the country. What is your take? I mean, do you run a 2 meter rig in the car anymore?
I do. I still have my 2 meter rig. Last time I went to, last year going to Dayton, I think I rustled up, just a couple of people, but my main conversations was with Charlie going up there. I mean, the repeaters were dead for me. Nobody on 5.2 going up there. So,
you know, see, I hate in Middle Tennessee, I absolutely hate Simplex because, you know, you got what, a 10-minute window with somebody maximum, you know, I mean, because you're going to hit a hill and they're going to hit a valley and you're gone, you know. So I like being on a repeater. To me, that makes more sense, especially with the topography that we're dealing with here in Middle Tennessee. That makes a whole lot of sense, you know. But that's always been the struggle here. So I'm glad to hear that maybe what's going on in East Tennessee will spread west, and south. Well, I don't know how it is there where you're at, Don. I don't know if you suffer from the same thing we have here or if you have ideal 2 meter, lots of activity. You know, it reminds me when I was a kid in Citizens Band, it was like a local community of people. Now, they were non-technical because they were CBers, but they were in they were like a community within the community. You might have 30 or 40 people, and they all knew each other. They all talked. They had conversations, asked, how are you doing, went back and forth, how's the kids, and so on and so forth. And this went on every night, every night, every night. And there were a lot of folks that didn't ever turn on their television set. They just turned on the CB radio and sat down with their favorite book in hand. They listened. They talked. It was a culture inside the local community, and it was really cool. I mean, I mean, that's the thing I think I miss on 2 meters. And, you know, even on 2 meters, people talk on it as if it's a contest, you know. Hey, Don, you're 599 Nashville. See you later. Bye. You know, it's like, no, you know, we want to rag chew. You know, we want to wear it out. We want some old codger on there telling you the same story four times. You know, that's what I want to hear on 2 meters, you know, because that's where all that belongs. Oh, well. Okay, now somebody shoot at me because I'm always radical and politically incorrect, I guess.
Well, it's pretty dead down here, and it really has been since Katrina. Katrina splintered everything down here, and not a lot of it has come back. It's funny, Tyler and I, my son Tyler, who is studying for his ticket, a couple of weeks ago, we drove into New Orleans to a maker fair, a mini maker fair at one of the colleges, community colleges. And I jumped up on the 14686 repeater, which is probably the best coverage of any. You remember that repeater, Kevin? Well, it's at about 600 feet, I think, up on top of the Channel 8.
Right, Channel 8 tower.
It's on the Channel 8 TV tower. It's at about 600 feet. And so it has seriously good coverage, and it's an emergency type repeater. Has Echolink on it and some other things, but jumped on there, and I actually held a conversation with my friend Mike, KB5OZE, for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so until I got to where we were going. But that was the first person that I had talked to on that repeater probably in 2 years. So it's I keep the HT at work, and I'm up on the third floor, so I have a little bit of altitude, but I can hit most of the repeaters in New Orleans with a 5-watt handy talkie, and I will bounce around from repeater to repeater to repeater and throw out my ID or listen or just whatever, and there's nothing. And New Orleans used to be back in the mid 90s and early 2000s, it was. It was hopping, but there just isn't that down here anymore. And I don't know if it's just the fact that, like Kevin said, it's just, you know, people move away from the hobby, people die, life takes them to other places geographically and otherwise or what. But, you know, we have to replace these people with new people coming in, and to make it as fun as we possibly can is the challenge, but not, it's pretty dead down here. And something that occurred to me as I was listening to Kevin talk about his for lack of a better term, his anchor character. Those characters cannot be manufactured. They can't be made. They can't be cast. That's just someone that has to fall into your lap. And if by the graces of God, you're lucky enough to have one of these anchor type characters land on your repeater and make a home there, then you have struck gold, because you cannot create those people.
No, you can't create them, but you know what you can do? You can go out and look for them.
Yeah.
And you can nurture them.
Nurture them. Exactly right. Yeah.
And a lot of repeater owners are not doing that. They're not actively seeking guys. Now, I will never invite someone from another repeater onto mine, ever. But if they ask, hey, do you mind? Absolutely. It's free, you know, free association. But we're not nurturing these people. We're not encouraging them. And that's, I mean, there's a lot of characters. I mean, there really are. By the way, Don, the 8.5 repeater is at what you said, 600 feet or 8.6 repeater is at 600 feet?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, you know what we call that up here?
Like on the ground?
Yeah, in the
in the valley. In the valley, yeah.
It's down in the valley. Beyond.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but if, you know, we're down here 50 miles from the Gulf where it's all flat.
So, I know. It's just so funny when you come from that environment, you come up here and you go, really? Yeah. So what's a good height? 3,000 feet? You're kidding me. Really? Wow. And you know, as Ted was saying, you want to keep a conversation going? Get on one of those.
Yeah.
And you can talk for an hour, you know, depending on where you're driving.
Right.
That will hold a conversation.
Well, you know, the strange thing that we ran into here, which I thought was a mite bit peculiar here in Nashville, and that was the fact that when I talked to repeater owners and mentioned Echolink, they would break out in hives. And I would ask why. Why? Now, I like Echolink better than IRLP because Echolink you can originate from a notebook or your cell phone. If you're in a position where you don't have a radio, you can originate there, excuse me, get into the system and have somebody to talk to if you can find somebody on a repeater. But, and I was talking to Bob Greenberg. He's got something coming out, I think, if it's not out already, that when you log into Echolink, it'll show you the repeaters that there's conversation on, which that's kind of cool. But anyhow, when I would talk to them about it, they were phobic about Echolink. And I couldn't figure that out. I thought, well, your repeater is dead, all right? There's nobody on it. You know, I could get on there, you know, and announce World War III, and it would make no difference in the world because no one would hear me, and if they did hear me, they wouldn't respond. Okay, so there's that problem. So why not put Echolink on, for goodness sakes? Somebody Ted, from out of town might light the machine up. You know, I don't know.
Ted, I got to tell you, I run Echolink. I've run Echolink for the last 7 years. We have people from all over the country that check into some of the nets here on Echolink. In fact, a guy that I don't know if Don, you know Larry down there in Chalmette. I think you might have talked to him. A guy down in Chalmette, where Don is you know where he works at, and where we're both kind of from. He checks in via Echolink every week to one of our nets. He's on there all the time. We get lots of people on Echolink. We used to get on at night, 9, 10 o'clock, and we just do random Echolink dials to places all over the country where we thought they might be awake. We'd call Australia, India, Germany, wherever we thought we might get some activity. And we get a lot of people listening to that. Just dial up a node. Just find out. Hey, let's find a repeater that's on. Boom. Click onto it. And some of the local guys would just come in here with their East Tennessee drawl and start, hey, how you doing? We're over here in East Tennessee. What are you doing? Where are you at? And there was a lot of we got a lot of good responses. We got a lot of no answers, but where we did get answers, we got very favorable comments. And for a while there, we were getting guys in from Germany until they got a little stickler. They got a little sticklish. Is that a good word, Don? Sticklish
works for me.
They got a little sticklish on some of our procedures. The Germans are very precise and they don't do a lot of kidding around. They kid it a little bit. I think we had some, let's say things that were lost in translation.
Yeah.
We're very, very nice and cordial. And that worked for a little while. And then I guess they moved on. But I agree with you, Ted. Echolink has really made that repeater. We had two guys made their first ham radio contacts on their iPhone through Echolink. It took their test, got on their iPhone, and got on Echolink.
Well, I was on, I just installed it on my smartphone, and I was sitting at the kitchen table, and I just picked a repeater at random and threw my call sign out, and a guy answered me on the Isle of Man, wherever that is, and he was driving along, so evidently the Isle of Man is large enough to drive a car on.
They have a big motorcycle race around the perimeter of the Isle of Man every year. Yeah, the Isle of Man.
It shows you my geographical ignorance here. And
it's over in Europe. It's
in England.
Yes, just in England.
In the west, west coast of England.
But yeah. we talked for a few minutes, and he was telling me about what his occupation was, what he did, and all that. You know, it was really interesting. And I thought, here I'm sitting at my kitchen table with my smartphone, and that's all I've got, and I'm participating in amateur radio in a QSO that's going over the air on the other end. My, is this not absolutely incredible? You know, and that's how I interpret it. I tried to tell it to a friend of mine, a pretty close friend of mine, is a repeater owner. Tried to relate that to him, and he was looking at me like a cow looking at a new gate. You know, like, well, why would you want to do that? You know? It's like asking these folks that never been in ham radio. You say, you ought to get a ham license. Well, why should I? I can call Germany on my cell phone. You know. They don't get it. They ain't never going to get it. But I think that Echolink and IRLP can light a repeater up. I really do. I think that enough activity could definitely, you know, make a big, big difference, especially if you get people who are doing it on a regular basis. You know. And by the way, just to let you know, Sticklish is a piece of licorice on a stick, okay? I just saw that you would know how that applies. I don't know, but that's what it sounded like to me.
It's black or red licorice.
I don't think it matters. I really don't. You know, although I don't think the red licorice is really licorice. Anyways, I don't know what it is, but
no, I've never gone back to it.
Anyways, oh man, I'll tell you what. Are we still? Did they pull the plug on us? Are we still here?
I didn't say anything.
No, I didn't hear anything.
I didn't say anything.
I had Jonathan Taylor on one of the QSOs, and we talked about, because he's the creator of Echolink, you know. And I think it's one of the most ingenious ideas. And the other thing, too, about Echolink, I don't think a lot of people think about this, but you got a lot of senior citizens living in high-rise buildings and places where they can't really have an HF radio. I mean, I don't care about the antenna restrictions. They just can't have one. And Echolink gives them the opportunity to be able to check into repeaters anywhere in the country. I think it's marvelous. But anyways,
it is.
Enough of my soapbox here.
Well, it's not a soapbox. It's fact. There's not a day that goes by that we don't get people checking in and communicating on Echolink. They might drop out of the repeater coverage area. They'll switch over and talk on Echolink through their Bluetooth. Happens all the time. Guys going over the Blue Ridge Mountains, or if they're on the other side of the Smokies, when they pick up and can get a cell site, they'll check in via Echolink. The fidelity is incredible. The delay is real low. In fact, Don and I did a test. Don, remember that?
We did
our Echolink test, and it's almost instantaneous.
Yeah, there was hardly any latency at all.
So it works really good. The fidelity is there. The ability to – I mean, it's simple. I mean, that is the one nice thing. It is really simple. And there are some things, if you've not used it, there's some add-ons called Echo Producer. A gentleman over in Ireland wrote the program and did a bunch of updates, and I think he just got bored with it. But the Echo Producer is what does all of the – features. Ted, the Echo Producer will go out and it'll capture bulletins, newscasts like the ones Don does, and ARRL and the rain report, some of the other ones, and it will play it back at the time we set. So you have schedules. You're keeping people at a certain time. They know the rain report's going to run, or amateur radio news line always shows up. And that has been a real blessing, because you don't have to go out, download it yourself, load it in, play it. It does it automatically. It's mindless, kind of like Don's show. But it helps people to, you know, which is a thing that we do in radio. We want to set schedules for people. We want them to know, for instance, on Sunday mornings, I run a number of I run all three or four of the shows. And that's because I know there's guys and ladies going to church. And men really don't want to talk to their wives. So why not run the programs in? And boy, let me tell you, we get a lot of favorable comments because of when it runs.
I was going to ask a question, and this is kind of off the beaten path. I mean, I don't know all the features now that's on Echolink that used to not be there, because I really, honestly, all I ever do is talk on it to somebody. But let me ask you a question. When you now, all these repeaters, are they linked together? Are you the owner of most of them?
Yes, and yes.
Okay. Now, the next question I have is, how difficult is it to coordinate frequencies and keep folks happy and be responsible for a repeater in a major city?
It's a pain. But when you set the rules and you set them in such a way that you don't come down hard, it's you gently guide. We keep within the boundaries of good taste. Everybody is on the same page. It helps when you have multiple people doing it. You tend to get less problems with, people who just want to go off on their own and say what they want. Everybody's kind of doing the same thing. We're all enjoying the same stuff. And just as an aside, all the repeaters are full duplex linked. So if somebody talks on this repeater and somebody talks on that repeater, they all go over. Everybody can hear everybody else. There's no doubling. There's no, you can't key someone out. All the audio comes through. And same thing with Echolink. You can talk and have conversations, and there's no, I didn't hear what you said. What did you say? Repeat it. Everything links together, full duplex, and that really helps out a lot.
Now, all of this, of course, is traveling over broadband.
No, it's all RF linked. Everything is RF linked.
So you're not using the. Well, then let me ask you this question: how would you log into Echolink with a notebook or a smartphone?
All right, the main hub is downtown Knoxville. At one of our transmitter sites, and everything kind of gets compiled together there through a couple of different multiplexers, and all of the links emanate from there and go out to their respective repeater sites.
Okay. I guess I was thinking that you had a lot of out-of-town repeaters, and I was just...
Crossville to Greenville, and then we have one in Gatlinburg and one downtown Knox Vegas.
Okay, so, but now, I thought somebody told me, maybe Don, you told me, I don't know. Of course, Don is always giving you misinformation, thinking that it's going to get you in trouble, and then he gets a chance to laugh at you.
That's why he's married.
Yeah. You say that like it's a bad thing.
do you have a machine in Nashville?
I don't, but here's what I do have. We have the M-tier system, and are you familiar with M-tiers?
To some degree, yes.
Okay, M-tiers, and the site hasn't been updated. It's in the works to be updated with the new repeaters, but if you come into Tennessee, there's probably about 40 repeaters that are linked, 35 or 40 repeaters that are linked together via RF, no internet linking or anything like that. And you can go from town to town to town, and you just have to switch repeaters, and you can stay in contact. When you light up one repeater, you light up the whole state. So I've got most of the ones from Crossville, which connects to Short Mountain over there in what's that county? I'm drawing a blank, but over near Murfreesboro and that area, and then that links into Nashville. From Crossville over and up toward Greenville, except for one, those are under my control. I own those, but it's a group of repeater owners who agree to just get on there and allow their repeaters to be linked together. And so it allows for UHF activity. And there's a lot of UHF activity on that system, and it's very active. And then we also have, are you familiar with P25? It's not a widely used digital mode, but it's more of a public service digital mode.
No, not I've heard of it, but I have no idea what it is.
All right. It's just it's just like D-Star, and actually it's more of akin to Fusion. They both use that C4 FM modulation, but it's got a couple of different little quirks in it. And the Knoxville repeater is connected via a data link. That's the only one that's connected via a data link over to Nashville and also to Chattanooga, and we've got one coming on in Tri-Cities, all on P25. So you can be in Nashville and get on there and talk to the guys in East Tennessee, and they're trying to get more areas. It's just that P25 is not highly popular because it's expensive. You know, you have to get a good radio. You can't go buy a Baofeng or a Waxon or a Hytera, whatever the other ones are. It's, you know, you got to get a decent radio, but the payoff is the group of guys that are on there are pretty serious about what they do. They have a good time, enjoy talking, but they take what they do kind of serious, and they don't play around too much.
I was going to say when you were talking about M tiers, now there is a repeater on one of the transmitting towers that we take care of, and it's in Eagleville, close to Shelbyville. Eagleville, what's the other, everybody calls it Kirkland. I don't know why in the South here sometimes cities have three names. You know, anyways, Kirkland, but it's a 440 machine, and it's on this 1,000-foot 102.9 The Buzz tower. And it's been maintained for a while. Now, I don't know who. I think Williamson County maintains that thing, or it's part of their deal. But years ago, it was something else. It was in with another group. But then somebody was telling me that was an M tiers repeater. So I don't know. I mean, do you know what I'm talking about, or is that am I being too nebulous here?
Mildly nebulous. I am trying to find my M tiers map. The computer got recombobulated here, and all the things that I used to be able to, you know, click on mindlessly have been moved, and now I'm trying to look for things that I don't recall.
You might want to tell folks, excuse me, you might want to tell folks what MTIRS stands for, what it means, and what they do.
Oh, well, you ask anyone in Middle Tennessee, and they will, without question, say it is the Middle Tennessee Emergency Amateur Repeater System. But it connects all three grand divisions of the state. And if you're not familiar with Tennessee and the grand divisions, it's basically the state is horizontally polarized mostly. And it's cut into three sections by the Tennessee River, and I think, it's Tennessee River. And the middle part of Tennessee has a number of these repeaters that are linked together via RF. So it's kind of like a hopscotch. This one connects to that one, connects to that one, connects to that one. And part of that link goes over from Nashville, travels eastward through Cannon County, and then over to Cumberland County, which is up on the Cumberland Plateau. A great place to visit if you haven't visited there before. And then over to East Tennessee, and then it spreads out there, and then also takes a little dog leg down to Bradley and Hamilton County, home of Chattanooga. So it covers a lot of ground, and it's a great system, rarely has failures. It's been, I tell you what, 3 weeks ago when we had those storms come through, really didn't get much of a word on the local TV stations, but I had the MTIRS repeater system on and was alerted to all the hail and the things that were coming through and got the word out. Hey, guys, this thing is kind of blown up. You might want to, you know, check the radars and stuff. This is during the middle of the day, so I guess a lot of people were at work. And
I want you to get a little bit more specific, Don. Maybe you have a line of questions, because I would like the folks that are listening to know exactly what MTIRS is, what they do, and you know, if they decide to get into amateur radio, you know, how they can be either part of MTIRS or at least understand the workings of it.
Well, it would help to live in Tennessee, because I don't think it really expands much farther than Tennessee. It used to have a little dog leg that went down into Huntsville, but that's long gone. First and foremost, you can go to their website, which is MTEARS. That's Middle Tennessee Emergency Amateur Repeater System .org, MTEARS.org. And the first thing that pops up is going to be the map of Tennessee with all the little repeater nodes that are on there. So each one has a corresponding dot and a number, and then they give the frequency of the repeater that corresponds to the number, so you know, depending on where your geographical location is, what repeater I want to go to, what the tone is, and it shows where they're connected to. So it's a great little system, and they primarily use it for weather spotting. They have other things that they do with it, but it's primarily for weather activations and emergencies, and it allows the area of Tennessee, Middle, West, and East, to come together to help share resources. It also connects the weather services together. So if they can't talk to each other by normal means, well, we've got the MTIRS system. And in Middle Tennessee and East Tennessee, the weather services have those radios in their amateur operating positions.
All righty. Well, you know, I guess some of those things, I guess, from an outstander, I want to say it, an outsider's point of view, you know, they're hearing that this is a Tennessee thing, but I'm sure they have the equal to that in their states and in their areas. And that's why I was saying, hey, describe what this is and what it does and all that, because somebody out in Idaho, you know, may have a system similar to that that they may want to get involved in. And
well, I know over in California, part of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, there's the Cactus Repeater System. Now, that is different in nature. It's more for conversation, and it's a massive system of repeaters connected together via RF. The MTIRS system is more geared to disaster, emergency communications, that nature, things of that nature. Although when we're not using it, it's great for just communicating across the state, and they encourage that. We all encourage everyone to use it just like normal, because it helps us know when things are not working. But Ted, the Cactus system, if you ever have a chance to look at that, the Cactus Network, that's a massive system of interconnected repeaters.
The PAPA system out in on the West Coast is fairly good too. And I'm wondering, there was a Condor. I'm wondering if Condor is still up and running. It probably is.
I'm not familiar with that one. Where is that located, Don?
It's out in California. You could actually, I think, go almost from Northern California around San Francisco all the way down to close to San Diego on the Condor link.
Wow. Well, I mean, those guys, you know, they got it together. They have a lot of good working groups. I don't know that we have that type of working relationships here. I would love to be able to interact with other states because there's a lot of camaraderie that can be gotten when you can talk to folks from other states and get to know them. A lot of cultural exchanges that can take place. Don, remember I was telling you about this gentleman that we talk to every Friday on one of the nets that we have. And Ted, the guy every weekend religiously checks in to this traders net we run. Some of the guys on the repeater run. And he gets in through a repeater that's up in Greenville, and it looks down through Asheville and parts of South Carolina. And he gets in from what he calls Peach Butt, South Kakalaki. And if you don't know where Peach Butt, South Kakalaki is, well, you're not from there. Peach Butt, there's a name for the town. I'll try and find the actual name. But it got the name Peach Butt because, well, they grow a lot of peaches in South Carolina. And their water tower at the top is shaped like a giant peach. Well, it looks like a rear end. And so they call it Peach Butt. And the guys in South Carolina all call South Carolina South Kakalaki. So he checks in from Peach Butt, South Kakalaki. And that's the kind of experiences and cultural interactions one would not be able to ascertain or obtain had not been for systems linked together to bring people together, and also it garnered some activity.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, you said earlier that the system is used primarily for emergency purposes, but when there's no emergency purposes or no emergencies going on, that you guys encourage people to use those machines, which makes sense to me because I would think you'd want to, the more you use something, the better it works. You know, if you don't use something over a period of time, that's when you find out that it doesn't work and you didn't know it didn't work.
Exactly.
So anyhow, but tell me about that. And the reason why I say that is because I have memories here, not to wear this out or to beat a dead horse, but it bears repeating because it's a type of mindset. A bunch of blind guys from the blind school here, or blind kids, I should say, that had got their tickets had never operated on a UHF band. And they came in and got on one of the UHF repeaters here and was talking on it. And a long-standing ARRL upright-type citizen just jumped all over them and told them to get off the frequency, that the National Weather Service was monitoring it and they didn't want to have to listen to all of their small talk and whatnot. Well, not a cloud in the sky, sun shining outside, and I felt like saying, look, tell the Weather Service to turn their radio off. You know, right now we don't have an emergency. We don't have a situation that is, you know, impending doom coming, you know. And, I mean, time after time, I have heard, you know, people talking on a repeater, bad weather starts to come in, somebody comes in, starts a weather net, everybody shuts up, and they participate, and everything is cool. When the emergency's over, they turn the net loose, everybody's back to normal. You know, so, I mean, I've seen that happen time and time and time again. So it just seemed really odd to me to approach it the way this guy did. So I'm curious, though, is that something written in stone? In other words, if there's no emergency going on, we want folks to operate the system. I mean, tell me about that a little bit, because that really bothered me, I will say, in the least.
And it should, because that's not what we encourage. We want to know that the system's working. We want people to know that, man, you can almost be. In fact, we're working really hard to get Shelby County and some of the surrounding areas to get in part, you know, into the system, because Memphis is a big old hole in more ways than one. They're just not part of it, and they really need to be. I mean, this is an important system that we have, and you know, you never know when that New Madrid fault is going to just break loose. This is the kind of system that will allow communications not only to the capital but across the state. It helps us move resources around if need be. I'm in communications with the guys with TEMA, and they encourage the use of the system. They want hams to use it in, you know, war and peace. Let's just say, you know, that it needs to be exercised constantly, and it's a good thing. I mean, I don't know. You know, maybe the old guard is changing. Maybe now. Guys are going, why did we do that? Why did we think like that? That's so exclusive. We don't need that. We need to get guys into the hobby. We want them to experiment, but we want them as people as well. And that's what we need to understand.
I was just going to ask Don. Don, did you just yawn a second ago?
Probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me tell you what it sounded like, okay, in my headphones here. It was like, you know, one of those 500 to 1,000-pound bears that just woke up from his winter nap.
When I turned my head away from my face, away from the microphone.
It doesn't matter, but he did this right in front of a Heil PR40 microphone with a microphone processor and the bass turned all the way up. And it just hit. David turned around, looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, what in the world is that? And then it hit me. I thought, that's Don yawning. So anyway, anyhow, I just thought I had to say that. Now, I don't know what it sounded like after it passed through the audio processor at the shortwave. So folks that are listening, that's what it was. And you're perfectly within your rights if you want to write us, email at WTWW.us and request a repeat of Don's yawn at any particular point in time. We'd be happy to play it for you because it really was some kind of special. I'll tell you why.
Well, I'm that's just the kind of guy I am.
I'm glad it was only a yawn.
Well, yeah. See,
oh, me. Well, what you're saying, Kevin, makes perfect sense. It sounds really cool. And I don't know what the policies are now because back at that point in time, I was just so frustrated by it all. I just turned the radios off, you know. And I talked to a lot of folks that basically were doing the same thing. Those young guys from the School of the Blind had gotten their tickets and then immediately run off a repeater. I thought, there's no reason. There's nothing I can think of in my world, you know, because I'm far from perfect and I make lots of mistakes, but that just seemed like one doozy of a miscall. You know, at least it seemed that way to me, especially in relationship to promoting amateur radio, which one of the experts at promoting amateur radio is Don Wilbanks. And, you know, he...
Well, that's one thing.
Yeah, he's... Well, I mean, he's devoted so much time to it, so I'm gonna shut up here and let Don talk, because this is supposed to be his segment anyways, and there I am running my mouth. I guess you put me in front of a microphone. It's like a automatic response, you know, triggers.
Well, I'm fascinated by all the stuff that Kevin is talking about tonight, because it's great to hear that things are being done right up there, and it shows you kind of how far behind we are down here in the South, in the hurricane belt.
Tennessee's the South,
but I'm talking about in the hurricane belt down here in the Gulf, okay. In the Gulf South. Man, if there's ever a place that needs linked repeaters, it's down here, all the way from you know, from the east coast of Florida all the way down into Texas. I mean, there should be some type of linked system down here, and sadly there's not. There used to be something in Alabama, I want to say, but that's I don't even know if that's still viable anymore.
Well, they got the D-Star. Alabama has
D-Star, yeah, but I'm talking about predating D-Star, there was some kind of a linked analog repeater system years ago. I want to say I heard about it back in the 90s when I first got licensed. But
well, it takes, you know what it takes, Don? It takes clubs getting together.
Exactly.
If you don't have, you know, individuals with the capability, then you need to get the clubs together and say, hey, we'll put up this part. You put up that part. It's just like doing the nodes for data, man. I'm drawing a blank. Dang it. We're doing it too, and I can't think of what it's called, but I'll think of it in a second. Mm-hmm. Mesh nodes. It's just like doing the mesh nodes. Everybody has their own little mesh node,
right. And
we all agree to work together. It that's all it takes. It takes someone making a call to another club president. Hey, how would you guys like to hook in with us? Maybe we can garner some more activity. That's all it takes. You just got to get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
And if you can't get the ball rolling with other people, then do it yourself. But people have got to start getting up and getting active and patronizing these repeaters across the country. You got to get on there. It's great to have the HF capabilities with your license. But as we've seen, the sunspot cycles are diminishing.
Yeah.
So getting the HF activity, we need to say, hey, we've got repeaters over here. We've got other modes for you to try out. And there's just a world of activity that can be garnered. A lot of repeater owners are getting old, would like to help, would love to bring, you know, guys in to help them. Hey, you're the next guy to take this thing over. When I need to sell it to somebody. That's why we need to bring the young hands in. We got to sell our craft to somebody.
It's very true. And, you know, you got to keep these repeaters on the air and active and, you know, with people talking on them, because how are you going to know in times of crisis if they're down, if they're never up?
Or where the activity's at.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we saw that with Katrina. I was downtown. And I'm the only guys I was able to work were Simplex, because I figured, okay, well, nobody's on the repeaters because a couple of them were still up.
Yeah.
But not.
I think there was one that never went down. Only one that never went down, I think.
Yeah, that was I think that was one on Channel 4's repeater. Yeah. Or the one on the Sheraton. One of those two. But there was no coordinated effort to say, hey, this is where we're going to go. We didn't have that. Hams have kind of woken up to the, hey, we need to get an idea of where everybody's going. If this repeater's down, are we going to this one? If all these repeaters down, are we going Simplex? How far can you work on Simplex? Who can you work on Simplex? We need to learn how to pass traffic around. And that's another lost art that would probably be another 2 or 3 hours of talking, passing traffic concisely.
Man, I haven't heard of Simplex net, and I can't remember how long. I used to remember the Aries nets in New Orleans. You know, they would be on the repeater for a little while, and then, you know, all right, well, let's everyone we'll go to 5.2 or pick a Simplex frequency, and we'll carry on with the net on Simplex to see how far everyone can get. I haven't heard that in forever.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, we try to do that on 6 meters. We have 6 meter nets here, believe it or not, and then we get on AM and 6 meter AM. I wanted to throw something out there to you. We do this Traders Net on Friday nights. Been doing it for a year now, and believe it or not, we're getting up to 85 check-ins. You know, on the repeaters, 85 people in a period of about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
That's a bunch.
I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just takes time. We're an overnight success that took a year and a half to develop.
Oh, there you go.
But it takes work. You've got to work it. Got to talk about it. Talk it up all the time. You've got to let people know that you're doing it. It takes a lot of effort, but it's worth it, because the result is you're going to get a lot of activity. People are going to come there looking for activity, and it's just a good thing, and we need not discourage hams from, in any way, shape, or form, from using the repeaters. If you don't want to use a repeater, turn it off.
But it's not just that. There's other areas or pockets that we that needs correcting inside our fraternity, and let me give you one quick example, and I won't dwell on it. I was told by an ARRL official, and believe me, he does not speak for the entire league at all. He speaks for himself, that if I were to talk about this on the air, he was going to sue me, okay? So you have to understand, you know, what I'm doing right now, I'm probably going to have the law offices of Bart Durham or one of these outfits, you know, calling on me here. But Holly went down to get driver's license or the driver's the tags for the plates on the vehicle, and she's got emergency plates. So the lady at the county office said to her, "If you're a member of ARES, you get a discount."
Yeah,
she says, she's kind of like, well, what is ARES? Now, she's got her general class license. She's got emergency plates, you know, hangs around with us. We do all of our live broadcasting from the Dayton Hamvention in Huntsville. And we hang out with Don Wilbanks. And she really didn't know what ARES was. Well, that's understandable. I mean, I got two sons the other day. I was talking about a beat frequency oscillator. They both have general class licenses. When I said beat frequency oscillator, they gave me a blank look. Like, what is that? You know? You know, there aren't radios with beat frequency oscillator controls on the front anymore, you know, so that's, you know, that's gone by the wayside. Anyhow, I told her, I said, well, we should be members of ARES and we should participate in it. I said, but we just haven't, you know, it just hasn't been a thing that we had, that we've had time to do. And then the club here in Lebanon, Tennessee, they used to be quite a bit distant, especially to newcomers, you know. So we went a few times, weren't real friendly, so we just kind of backed off. Well, I told her, well, get the forms. Let's join ARES. She said, okay. I said, that could be real interesting because I said, there's the weather spotting and all that. Of course, I don't know what they do here. You know, I haven't been exposed to it, but let's join ARES. So she had to make, like, I don't know, close to a dozen phone calls and wait a period of a couple weeks before she actually heard from someone, okay? When they got around to talking to her, she filled out this application thing and turned it in. And then the next thing you know, she gets this letter back that says, and I'll pause here for a second and I'll say, how much business do you think Amway would have done if they would have sent a letter out to their prospective members that says, now listen, there's no point in joining unless you go to the meetings. And if you're not going to go to the meetings, we don't want you. Don't bother us. Okay? Now, I would have to say that Amway would have been out of business in a short period of time because their whole thing was to entice people in, welcome them in, coerce them in, you know, lie to them, whatever, you know, but get them to try to participate, you know. But this outfit sent this letter that says, well, if you're not planning on participating, we don't want you around. And I thought, whoo. Well, how do I know if I'm going to participate when I don't really even quite understand totally what it is? You know, and I wrote the guy back an email and basically blistered him. I couldn't help it. It just upset me. I thought, you invite people in. You welcome them in. Ask them, what are you interested in? You know, what part of ARES would you like to be involved in most? What would be your dream of getting involved with ARES? What part of that would it be? And come out to the meetings and maybe make the meetings a potluck dinner on whatever, you know, second Thursday of each month or whenever they have their meetings. Evidently, they must have had a real bad attendance problem. And, gee, I wonder why, you know. So, anyways, I expressed all of that. In short terms, I just said, you know, this is ridiculous. It's not good. It's not good for the amateur radio fraternity. And so anyways, then I got this mean letter back. And then when I went to the one ham fist, I ran into the one guy who across the table told me, if you talk about this on the radio, I'm going to sue you. And I thought, well, you know, knock yourself out because that'll be the first thing you've done since you've held that position. So anyhow, I think we have a problem. We have a problem in our fraternity that we need to correct one way or the other. We need to get people smiling. We need to get people friendly. We need to get people enthusiastic. And what is it that Zig Ziglar says? He said, if you want to get the things in life that you want, then you first have to help other people get the things that they want. And I think if we all had that attitude, if, you know, and I believe people like Don, it you know, it radiates out of you. That's your attitude. And the same thing with Kevin, just listening to you guys on the air. You know, you're trying to help other folks achieve what they want to achieve in this fraternity, you know, and that way, eventually, you're going to be able to achieve the things you want to be able to achieve. You know, instead of stopping the whole thing in the middle and saying, well, if you're not going to participate, you just get out of here. You know, something's wrong with that. And I don't see how ARES can grow. I don't see how the fraternity can grow with that. So I think that, you know, the problem goes deeper than repeaters and deeper than curmudgeons. It's, well, maybe not curmudgeons, but it goes to the point where the folks that are running the operation, so to speak, on a volunteer basis, We've got to have folks doing that that are genuinely interested in the hobby. They're interested in the fraternity of ham radio and the development of other amateurs, not just what they think. And they need to get a little bit more marketing savvy. They got to understand that you can attract a lot more flies with honey than vinegar. Basic principle that they don't seem to have learned. Okay, now I'm going to shut up and let you guys talk now that I've set you completely up for a lynching. You tell me if you think I'm off base.
No, I think you're right on base. It's crazy to have that kind of attitude. I don't know. It's just we should all be inclusive, and we should all be wanting to share the wealth. And because you know, if we make somebody else a smarter ham, then they're going to make somebody else a smarter ham, and it's all going to come back to us eventually. And you know, so I don't know. It's just I never understood that. I'm protecting my little piece of the pie. I mean, you can let somebody taste your piece of the pie and still have enough. You got to share the pie, man. I don't get it.
Well, I also look at Kevin here, and I
try
say,
not to. Kevin is not an attractive man.
No, I'm not. I know that.
How much money out of pocket, out of your own pocket, have you put into maintaining repeater systems for other people?
Was my wife listening? a lot. Let me just tell you, a lot.
Yeah.
And for myself, for others, we try to help everyone. We want everything to work. Is there a competition between repeater owners? Yeah, I'm sure there is. It's healthy. It's not a, I'm better than you. It's like, oh, you did that. Well, I can try and do this. It's good for amateur radio. It really is. Especially when it's not, when you're not trying to knock the other guy. You're just trying to better yourself and better the systems that you offer to hams to use. And that's exactly what it is. We're putting our money, our time into something that benefits other ham radio operators. And just like a chef works on preparing great meals and great dishes, the thanks we get is when you eat our food.
Yeah.
That when you consume what we put out there, that's the great benefit. That's the return we get, Don. When you talk about the benefit that comes back,
yep,
that's the benefit.
Yep. Exactly. And, talking about the outlay of money that repeater owners and coordinators or whatever, people that maintain these links, such as yourself, put out, it's not just that, but it's the time away from your family that you have to go and invest in that to keep these systems up and running.
No, that's the benefit.
Well, my wife would disagree because I don't have a great outlay of cash in the things that I do, but what I do takes up a whole lot of time away from her. You know, she's in there in the living room right now by herself, probably reading. It's an investment. It's an investment in time and money that if people are getting enjoyment or learning or getting some type of betterment out of what we do, then that's where it comes back to us.
I totally agree, and that's what we try to encourage others to do is to find the thing that you do well.
Yes,
and then give that back. Go to the meetings. You know, Ted talked about Aries. There's a lot of Aries activities. There's a lot of groups that do. We have a bunch of Aries nets here, mm-hmm. not just on my repeaters, but on other repeaters. They're very active. I don't really know of any that are turning people away. Yeah, they encourage participation. They really do. And there's a lot of things that people can participate in, a lot of different activities that benefit the Aries groups in each county and or parish. So the emergency coordinators, the ECs for each of these either county or parish groups, they need to be taught to be teachers, to encourage, hey, we need guys who are good at digital the radio, putting out things like FL Digi, using those types of modes of communications. We need guys who are good with setting up antennas. We need guys who are good with emergency communication, setting up power. There's a lot of different aspects to ham radio, particularly involving ARIES, that hams need to be encouraged to get involved in.
Well, Kevin,
because it takes a team. It takes a team to do that stuff. It takes a team, just like football or anything else. If you're going to have a good quality product that you're doing out there, like if it's ARIES, you got to have a good team that knows how to work together and put that service out there.
Yeah, Ted, you were going to say something.
Well, my question was this: I was just across the room whispering to David here to see what his take was. You said they do a lot to encourage hams to become part of ARES, but my question is how do they encourage them? Now, do they take like a hot poker with a brand on it, and chase the ham around until he signs a contract that says, yes, I'm coming to the next meeting. How do they encourage? I can't, they say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You got to make these people want to do this. This has to be something that they find really cool and exciting and want to be a part of. You can't write a threatening pre-membership letter telling them these are the conditions. I can't think of one living soul that if they got one of those letters would ever join. They'd say, what the hell does this guy think he is? I mean, that's what they would think. So what do they do on your end to encourage folks to become members?
Activities on the air. When you hear guys and groups doing things, participating in marathons, participating in all the things that amateurs are invited to participate in, amateur groups. And it takes the leadership, whether they're self-appointed or self-styled, however they're in leadership, for those people to go out to different organizations and say, hey, we can provide communications. We can provide we help churches that do big fireworks presentations or air shows provide communications for parking. I mean, whatever it is, getting out there, getting involved, and then when the ham community hears these activities on different repeaters, hey, how do I get to do that? Who do I need to talk to? That type of activity happens a lot, and that's why we encourage a lot of activity on the repeaters because it garners more activities, in the membership level.
Well, it also provides a means of being able, a reason to operate your radio or to carry your radio with you to an event, and become more familiar with it. It also gives you the opportunity of the fraternalism, the fellowship with other radio amateurs. To me, that seems like the strong suit.
We also do meet and greets, and we kind of started doing it, and I had to drop out because I was so busy doing other things, but we started doing remember the old CB breaks where a bunch of guys would get together? Well, we started doing that with ham radio people in different communities around the Knoxville area, trying to get groups to, eat together once a month, twice a month, whatever it is, and then hopefully after we get this established, then we can start cross-pollinating. A couple of guys from this group will go eat at the Sevier County guys group, or the Blount County guys might go meet over with the Knox County. However it works out, we're trying to implement that. There's a Facebook page called Hams Helping Hams. And I helped kind of conjure the idea up, and then a gentleman that took off with it has done a great job with subjects that are, meant to help hams either get into the hobby, find things in the hobby that they enjoy. They're very active. I mean, I just can't emphasize. And it's different people doing different things. It's not necessarily a concerted effort or a coordinated effort. It's just different guys in different groups saying, we understand for self-preservation reasons, if anything, We need to encourage hams. We need to teach them. You know, Don, I don't know if I tell you this. About a year ago, got asked to speak at one of these little sessions, and it was on voltmeters. And I said, really, people want to they want to learn how to use a voltmeter? They don't already know? No. Had a ton of people show up to that, and it was almost difficult to try and find things to talk about on a voltmeter because it's so simple. You would think, do you just not know how to work a voltmeter instinctively?
Yeah, well, it's simple to you, but not simple to someone who's never held one in their hand.
Or grew up like we did.
Right, exactly. Fiddling with electronics, exactly, yeah.
Well, I still insist on using an analog multimeter. You know, I won't touch a digital multimeter. I've made too many mistakes with those things. Well, I love analog multimeters.
I picked up a Heathkit VTVM at a ham fest not too long ago.
Don's mesmerized with probes.
Yes, I am.
But now I'll tell you, those VTVMs will also double as a Scientology e-meter. So all you
got
a couple tomato juice cans, and you can, you know, audit your wife, and not a problem.
Oh, awesome.
Anyway. Good deal. It's like an in-house lie detector.
Great.
But apparently, now let me ask you, when you have one of these...
The voices of experience here, apparently.
Yeah, whenever you have one of these eat sit-down meetings. So maybe we ought to take a clue from the Wilson County one here, and that is you let everybody come in, and they get to sit down and eat. But you get to the point in the meal where you're getting ready to serve the dessert, and then you serve them these forms that say, unless you agree to come to every meeting, no dessert for you tonight. What do you think? You think that would work?
I think you'd do better with just passing out Rohypnol.
Oh, me. Anyways. I just thought that was kind of funny, but anyhow.
Hams love desserts, don't they?
I think, though, what you're talking about is, once again, that is absolutely common sense, and I think it makes total sense that you have a sit down meal, maybe even a potluck dinner type thing. Those are fun, you know, and then cook up some kind of program to have and all that, and that would be an ARES meeting, not a local ham meeting, an ARES meeting, and then talk about different things about what's going on. And I think it's really important to probe people to find out, and then we're back to the probes again, Don, to find out what it is about ARES that they would like to do. It's really funny when you boil it all down. Folks have very, very unusual motivations for things, you know, and there may be some guy that just wants to put an orange vest on and strap a walkie-talkie to his side. And then just show up in public so he can be seen. You know, I mean, it could be something so simple, you know. And other times there are people. I remember ARES groups. I know this may sound off track, but ARES groups that did Wheels on Meals, and to them it was a big deal. They were all into it. They loved what they were doing. And I think that's the kind of thing that makes it, when you really enjoy something and you're actually doing something for someone else. When you walk away from the event, you feel like you've accomplished something or you've done something for someone. I think that is like the epitome of importance.
Hey, Ted, you remember the Gatlinburg fires? I'm sure you do. Just afterward, maybe a couple of days, maybe a week, a couple of the ARES groups got called and they were asked for volunteers to come out and they needed a lot of people to help assess damage. Just go to each lot. They would give each group, and I'm trying to remember how it was conveyed to me. They gave each little group of hams a section to work on, and they would go through and assess damages for each lot. Not anything professional, but just to kind of get a feel of what was out there. And the ham community really benefited from that as far as how we're perceived. And besides, you know, it's important for the ARES groups not only to have members, but it's real important that the ARES groups are perceived as necessary and find things to help benefit the community and their local EMA directors, because those are usually the guys who work with the ARES groups in their county, who say, hey, you all serve a purpose. We want your help. We want to help you. You're helping us and also benefiting the community. And we fulfill part of that criteria in licensing, which is to benefit the public. I mean, we're working to a degree. Our license requires us to help benefit the public. And that gives us that opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and I think the perception, which you kind of touched on that, the perception is so important that the folks in the community see us as helpers, as servants, aided by our amateur radio fraternity and hobby. To me, that is really important, rather than seeing us as some sort of, you know, radio pack and security guards, I guess is about the best way to put
with
it.
Yellow lights and things.
Yeah, exactly. Don, any comments there? I mean,
no, I completely agree. I mean, it's all about getting out and using the talents that we have to go out and help other people, whether it's Meals on Wheels or just whatever. You got to get out and use the radio and get the radio out in front of the general public, so the general public maybe can see the radio and say, hey, what's that all about? You expose them to the hobby, you get new people into it, and that's the whole thing, because if we don't get new people in, there's not going to be a hobby.
No, you'll have no one to talk to. But I have to take issue with that exposing people, Don. I don't know why you want to do that, but
no, I'm not exposing myself to people. I'm exposing the hobby to people. Oh. I only expose myself to you.
Oh, that makes me feel so good.
Well, I mean, I have to, because otherwise I got to stop you from begging at some point.
Where in the world is this radio program going to? Anyways, here, I don't.
South.
Yeah, south. Yes.
Oh me. Anyhow, I think exposure is important. You know, but I'm telling you, so many times. I'll tell you what happened to us. We had a what was it that exploded out there near Hartsville? Remember, the flames were way up in the air, and it looked like. It looked like a jet fighter or something. It crashed to the ground.
It was wild.
Yeah, y'all had an air show that a jet crashed at not that long ago.
Oh, this was, I mean, we were watching this from a distance. Well, anyhow, we jumped in the car and started driving that way, and we got to the scene. Well, I wish I could remember what that was. See, I don't know, but the fire was big, you know. And we ran into our local sheriff, and we know the fella, but anyways, when we pulled up, he said, oh, God, you guys are with the local ham club, aren't you? Well, and there was a discussion with him that precedes that made his comment just then a joke. But then he says, well, he said, are you going to open the trunk and take out your orange jumpsuits and flares? And are you going to then grab HTs and start bossing us around and telling us what to do? Because, frankly, he said, I'm kind of at a loss as to what to do. I would almost like to have somebody like that right now. But he was making fun of the local amateur radio group, you know. Here they come. They got their orange jumpsuits, are taking over, you know. And there's something to be said about that, because that's, if you're perceived like that, you got real troubles. You know, if you're perceived like a servant or someone there to help, then you've got, you know, that's a plus, and that works in your favor. You know, in the end, that will bless you in the end, I believe. You know, but so many times I think the way hams come across is like bulls in a china shop. We're here, we got our radios, you know, we'll straighten all this out. And what they don't understand is the local authorities, they don't want you to straighten it out. You know, so I don't know. I think perception is everything, and I think that the only way for us to be perceived the way we want to be perceived is we have to have the right kind of exposure to the public. And I'm not sure that's what Don was talking about, but I know what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
There's a group of hams that, and it's not just hams, but it's CBers as well. And I think it kind of, the CBers have a poor reputation. I'm trying to pick my words gingerly here, as being the
react now.
Well, you know.
Yeah, well, they've got an edge when it comes to flares and orange jumpsuits.
The react bunch, and it's, I don't know if it's a lack of training, perhaps, but certainly no lack of enthusiasm, and sometimes that enthusiasm may not be well placed. But you know, with the proper training and the proper tact, the people who like to go out and do the emergency communications can be a great asset. But unfortunately, it seems like the opposite are the more visible bunch, and therefore you get the reputation as being what's the term? Whackers, I think, is a term that I've seen for.
It may be a cart before the horse type scenario where they're trying to take over, but not create the relationship with
exactly
the city with these you know, the officers.
Right, exactly. Work together with the city, get a little training, do things the way that the city work within the parameters that the city lays out, so that everybody can work together, and and that problem will go away, I think.
That's why it's important to work with your EMA directors, your city managers, whoever. If you don't have an EMA director, maybe your town or your city's too small. City managers are the next group of guys you want to introduce yourself or your group to, and say, "Here's what we do. Here's why we do it. And if we can be of service, we're here. If not, we'll be over there waiting. We'll do what we can do within." The bounds of good taste, but we're not going to be a hindrance to the operation. And it takes pre-planning. You've got to get out there in advance. You've got to show these guys, we can do the job. We can be responsible. We're not going to have guys that are going to fly off the handle, because we're training them through courses that are offered not only by the state, like Tennessee offers a lot of courses, but there's a lot of federal training that's free, that you can take ICS courses online and get lots of information on how to conduct yourself, how to work within the structure of an emergency, the way the command system is set up. There's too much information out there for us to claim ignorance. The orange jumpsuit thing, I think we're working past that that stigma, we'll call it, and becoming more involved. I mean, for us to have the relationship, even in Tennessee, with TEMA that we do, and there's a lot of hams in TEMA, and they understand our limitations, and they know what we can do, and they're all for us participating in activities, events, emergencies, whatever the case may be, but we have to present ourselves in a, well, even though we're amateurs, in a professional manner, and that's what we're working toward. I believe that mindset is starting to take over the community.
I just want to say, Kevin, you're back to that gating sound again. It's almost.
I must have got off mic a little bit, but I've turned the gating off.
Okay, I'm going to say we can still. Are you hearing it, Don, on your end?
Yeah, it's. I'm thinking it might be some sort of internet latency or something within Skype, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I don't hear it on my own audio. I can hear myself in one of the writes out on the headphones. So that's why I'm going, I don't hear it. But I had somebody text me, an engineer down at WWL in New Orleans, that texted me and said, "Hey, you sound even more stupid on the radio than you do in person, and you're getting chopped up."
Yeah, it's getting very choppy. So I don't know. Move up a little closer to the mic. It could be that you're far enough away to where maybe there is a gating circuit inside of Skype somehow. Who knows what they put in these things? So
really,
get up close. Now Don sounds perfect. You know, and it's hard to believe that knowing him, but he really sounds good.
According to the meter on Skype, I'm hitting the settings that it's supposed to hit, and it looks good. I don't see it falling off, but I'll sit here and work it a little harder if that's what you need.
Well, that's better, don't you think, Don? Didn't that improve him?
Uh-huh. Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. I watch these guys on Ham Nation fight Skype all the time. It's like, it's time for a Skype fight. You know, and it's just the way it is. Welcome to our world of technology. It's like,
hey, let's break out the redneck horn.
There you go.
I don't know where mine is. It may say something bad.
Yeah.
So anyhow, with the repeaters that you've got right now, and the amount of, I guess I want to say, monetary outlay and time outlay that you have, what I want to say is, how do you, in your, you know, how do you feel, or how do you take to the fact that, you know, at some point in time at 2 o'clock in the morning, your phone rings, okay? And it's some guy on the phone and says, hey, the repeater over here in such and such a city is down. Are you going to fix it? What's going on here? What kind of Mickey Mouse outfit are you running there? You know, I know you've gotten one or two of those. I know you have. I'm just curious. How do you handle that?
Well, you just tell them that I'll get to it as nicely as I can. I'm not paid for this, but as soon as I can get out to the site, and as you know, living in this state, there's nowhere that's high that you can get to easily. And most of the driving, except for the one downtown, takes less than about an hour and a half. Some are on paved roads. Some of them are on really gravelly roads. The one that's at the downtown site, if it goes down, normally I have a board op or someone that's in the building, because we keep it manned 24/7, that I can call up and say, hey, can you go flip this? Can you do this? Can you reset that? So at one point, I do have a body that I can call fairly quickly. The other ones, no, they've kind of learned over time that they're going to have to be a little patient, and when, you know, I get to it when I can. In a lot of cases, it's usually after a storm. You know, you get a lightning blast, you know, wind, whatever the case may be. But yeah, you do get the calls, and it's just like with the broadcast guys when they go off the air. Yeah, I'll get to it when I can. Not really, but it's yeah. But wait, I'm getting paid by you, huh? No. But the ham guys have come to the realization that we're busy, we have a life, and that they've learned to be patient. I mean, there's other repeater owners in the area here that also have, you know, the high profile repeaters, and it takes a while to get to them. We do what we can. We try to keep spares. Usually before I go to a repeater site, I got a spare with me. I got something I can put back on the air. So you just don't go up there with the hopes that you get it fixed. I hedge my bets.
Well, the reason why I ask is I notice in the broadcast arena, you know, we could be out working on a broadcast transmitter station off the air, and the phone rings, and it's somebody at the studio and says, how long will it take you to get back here? And it's like, why? Well, I can't log into my Facebook.
Yeah.
And I've seen other repeater owners get just chewed up one side and down the other because a machine is down. And I thought, I'm just thinking to myself, well, everything about that machine is out of pocket to the guy that's maintaining it, you know, and he does a fairly credible job. Plus, he works two or three other part-time jobs. You know, and the curmudgeon calling on the phone, he doesn't do anything, you know. I mean, his wife supports him or something, you know. But he is now the repeater critic, you know. And I was just wondering how you react to that, because that, to me, running and owning a repeater is a thankless job. I just don't think, first off, I think that hams, for the most part, are somewhat socially challenged. Now, am I right in that, or am I wrong in my assumption?
I think you're right.
All right, I mean, so then to me... To me, don't talk about Don now, so he's going to hang up. And anyways, but to me, it seems like with that social challenge, it makes doubly hard dealing with them in a situation like when you're in. If a machine is down, they call up on the phone and they start acting as if you're the guilty party, and they have to, you know, scold you for it. And, boy, I don't know. I don't think I could tolerate much of that.
No, one of the other guys here, Tim, he's got a number of repeaters as well. And, man, I would see these guys kind of, I'm not going to say beat up on him, but, you know, they'd get on him about, hey, how long is this thing going to be down, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, the poor guy would give his own time up from whatever he was doing to go up there, wherever the repeater might be down at, and do what he could to get the things back up. And we do that. I mean, that's what we like doing. Don't kid yourself. We enjoy that kind of stuff. It's not necessarily, I don't call it a labor of love for others. I mean, I enjoy it, that's why I do it. If I didn't like doing it, I wouldn't do it. I like to. If no one talked on these repeaters, I would still go up there. I would still piddle with them. There's a benefit in doing it, but quite frankly, I do it for myself. And that's you have to, because if you don't do it for yourself, you can't go off the attaboys that other people give you because you're not going to get it. You know, it is kind of selfish, but that's fine. If that's your motivation, and that's mine, I enjoy the technology. I enjoy doing those types of things. So,
yeah, I'm talking about you've been up, you know, 2 or 3 days at work. You've been deprived of sleep. You're exhausted, tired. Maybe you got a cold or something coming on, you know, and a machine just drops off for some reason. Or the audio drops off, but the carrier and everything else is still working, and that phone rings, you know, and the smart you-know-what on the other end. Well, when are you going to fix this thing? It's been off the air for 2 hours. What the hell are you doing over there? I mean, I've heard these calls come in to repeater owner operators here in Nashville. And I, for the life of me, I could not figure out how the repeater owner operator did not just go down the phone and grab the guy by the neck, you know. So that's why I was asking about that. And I'm asking about it for another reason, and that is to remind everybody that these things don't just run themselves. You know, a repeater takes a lot of maintenance. It takes a lot of money to keep it up as well. Because final tube goes out, if it's a tube, you can tell my vintage, you know, or something crazy goes on and they have to replace a piece. Well, you know that it's out of pocket, usually out of the owner or the operator, because there's nobody running around passing a hat as a rule. So anyhow, I brought it up for those reasons only. So, but if you enjoy that, and I think a lot of that is the way radio engineers are. I mean, around here, it used to be like a fire drill. 2 o'clock in the morning, phone rings, transmitter's off, everybody's up, getting dressed. We're ready to go down the pole and jump on the fire truck, you know, and everybody got a big bang out of that. But after, you know, that does wear out after a while, though. When you start getting a little older and you're not getting any sleep, you know. But anyhow, that's why I brought it up. Because I felt like repeater owner operators don't get enough credit, and people don't stop and think as to what does it take to keep this signal on the air so that when I key up my HT, somebody hears me.
Agreed. And one of the beauties of Facebook is you get to post pictures of your repeater site. So for the guys who don't have the opportunity to go up there and kind of get an idea of what you're doing and what's involved, they can kind of see what's going on with not just Facebook too. It's also YouTube. There's a lot of videos up there that show the complexity of what goes into these. And let me tell you, you know what's worse than the repeaters themselves is the duplexers. Man, duplexers, if you don't get those things tuned right, they'll cause you fits, they'll cause descents, noises, all kind of strange things. So it there's a lot of different pieces to just the repeater. You know, it's the antenna, the heliax, coax, whatever you're using, it's you're up there, and a lot of times, Ted, as you well know, you're nestled in with a couple of other maybe commercial or maybe governmental radios that you have to play nice with. You have to be a good citizen on that tower. You have to make sure that you're not causing interference to those guys. And sometimes that's who you get the call from. Sometimes it's the broadcaster. Sometimes it's the two-way radio operator. Or the the commercial guy who allowed you to be on their tower, and now your stuff is causing them fits, and you can't take that call and say I'll get to it when I can. No, you got to go deal with that one if you want to keep your repeater up. So some of them you can kind of put off, but there are some you cannot, and it's just as important as that call for the broadcast transmitter.
Well, we are out of time, but I wanted to turn this over in the direction, although, Don, you haven't got a lot of time.
That's fine. Listen.
Maybe 3 minutes, but no.
That's fine. We have learned a lot, and Kevin is just like the best guest ever. So
we need to hear about Young Ham of the Year. We need to hear about nominations. We need to hear about the Ham Nation event, and I'm trying to think of what else.
Amateur radio newsline.
So you've got
all coming up on us. Yeah,
yeah. You got a brief period of time. You have to cover all the bases, and you have to do it accurately, or else you're going to get razzed about it. So
Be articulate.
Yes, be articulate.
Do that. Yeah. All right then. Amateur Radio Newsline, of course, heard here on WTWW. Thank you so much for that, Ted. We appreciate it. But the Young Ham of the Year nominations are open. They are open for the remainder of this month. We are rapidly winding down. And I know we have at least one nominee that came in early. I think we may have additional ones. I think. I'm not sure. But they typically come in the last couple of weeks of the nominating period. But it is open until the end of the month, which is May 31st, nominations will close. And, of course, the presentation will be made at the Huntsville, Alabama Ham Fest, which is the third weekend in August, which is exactly 3 months after Dayton, which is coming up next weekend. So excited about that. So if you have a young amateur, 18 or under, who is doing something extraordinary with amateur radio, by all means, go online, arnewsline.org, and click on the YHOTY tab at the top of the page, and there you will find the rules, the nominating form, and also the press release from last year's winner, and you can get an idea of what he did to be awarded this honor. And, of course, Ham Nation, that's tomorrow night on the Twit Network every Wednesday night. And we have the tomorrow night is the 299th episode of Ham Nation. So 300 will be at Dayton. Bob Heil and Gordon and Dr. Tamitha Scove and a few others will be, let's see who else, Valerie Hotsfeld will be there at Dayton for the 300th episode. And then the week after is the Ham Nation 300 special event. It's an HF and also a VHF and digital operating event. So it's not just get on HF and collect the special event call signs. And we also have a D-Star and DMR and Fusion opportunities as well. And something that's going to be going on all summer is the Ham Nation 300 Challenge, which is you collect points for doing various things. And that goes all the way through the summertime. All the information is on QRZ to any one of our 9 1-by-1 special event call signs. Mine is Whiskey 5 Hotel. You can go to my QRZ page for Whiskey 5 Hotel and get all of the information. But that will be the week after Dayton, will be the one-week HF part of the Ham Nation 300 operating event. And then, of course, the Ham Nation Challenge will go on through the rest of the summer. And it's going to be a fun thing. We've kicked it up a notch. Of course, we did 100 for the 100th episode. We did 200 for the 200th episode. And we've kicked it up several notches for the 300th, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So there you go. Just if you've not heard of Ham Nation, just Google Ham Nation. It'll be the first thing that comes up. It's an internet TV show about amateur radio. We're going to get ready to do episode number 299 tomorrow night. It's Gordon West and Bob Heil and a bunch of other people, and they let me come in there too. And we do amateur radio newsline headlines on there, and it's just it's a great resource for new and old hams. It's something that Bob is doing right now that is wildly popular. He's doing the Pine Board Project, where he's building an AM transmitter out of discrete circuits, discrete parts, including tubes, on pine board. And that has proven to be wildly popular. So everything about the Pine Board Project is online as well. So check us out on Ham Nation.
All righty, I want to mention that if you are in a situation where you're not near a computer, and you can listen to Ham Nation on WTWW at 8 p.m. Central tomorrow night, live on the shortwave radio dial. Now, back to Kevin. Is there any parting remarks here? Because we have to move along. We are out of time.
Yeah, Don, at show 300, do you guys go into syndication?
Yes. Well, God, I hope so. Somebody needs to get paid for
this. That's where the that's where the money's made at, is the all the reruns.
Yep, that's something else that I don't think people understand is, you know, I'm not paid a cent for that. So it's a labor of love, as is everything else in this hobby that we do.
Well, other than that, I just want to thank Ted and Don for inviting me, and appreciate the opportunity to talk about a small portion of this hobby that I think we all love, and it takes up a lot of our time. And so I guess we're passionate about it. And, you know, I just encourage people wherever they're at, whatever country they're in, get your license, get on the air, and talk and communicate with people, interact. That's part of what we do is we need to get to know each other around the world, and maybe that'll, you know, help get us, you know, help us to understand each other, and might bring a little peace.
Sure couldn't hurt.
Well, that and alcohol.
Exactly.
There you go. Okay, David, any parting remarks?
Hey, again, as always, it's been a great show. Thank you very much, both of you gentlemen, and it's been good. I've enjoyed it.
And Don.
Right. Yeah, we got to have Kevin back. Kevin, you're a great guest. I've learned a lot. All the years I've known you, I've learned a ton tonight. So,
like, know me in the biblical sense? No,
that's a whole different show.
Yeah.
On a whole different frequency.
Right.
Okay.
All righty. Yes. Different station, matter of fact.
Yes.
All right. 73s. I want to tell you about something that's just absolutely, simply amazing. And you say, what's that? Well, it's the MFJ 939 automatic antenna tuner. And you ask, what's so amazing about it? Well, it's very small, compact unit. It'll handle up to 200 watts. I mean, it'll handle a Drake TR4, a Swan 350, or any modern radio that's out there. You simply plug the output into the 939 antenna tuner, give it about 5 to 10 watts, and it just tunes. No cable. You don't have to have a cable running between the tuner and the radio. It's utterly fantastic, very quiet. You will love this thing, and it's priced unbelievably low. You need to go to the website, mfjenterprises.com, and check out the 939 antenna tuner, or just Google MFJ 939. Let me fill you in on something you may not know about, and that is you can listen to Ham Nation on shortwave. You can listen to Ham Nation live Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time on 5085 kilohertz on WTWW. Join Bob Heil and the gang live on WTWW 5085 for Ham Nation on Wednesday nights. It's all about ham radio, but not necessarily politically correct. It's QSO Live. Tuesday nights on 5085. We'd love for you to join us and listen to QSO Live as we have guests on each week, and sometimes they're just not politically correct. That's QSO Live on 5085, Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Central on WTWW. Okay, right now, I'm sitting next to a stack of QSL cards. and a stack of U.S. postage stamps. That's right. You want one of these QSL cards? Do ya? Well, then get off your butt and send us an email. The email address is simple. It's simply email at WTWW.us. That's email at WTWW.us. And we will send you a QSL card. You'll have your own WTWW official QSL card. Hey, once again, folks, thanks so much for listening to WTWW, your favorite shortwave radio station just outside Nashville, Tennessee.